A surfer paddles out to the surf zone, waiting in the crashing surf for the right wave to ride. Shallow water waves carried by global winds to the beach interact with local winds. To the lay observer of the ocean's waves, patterned and random might seem interchangeable terms. But the surfer knows when they enter the water that they are participating in a convergence of physical oceanographic properties. When the direct offshore wind strengthens, the force builds, the speed and the height increase, and a barrel wave forms, the holy grail of surfing. The line between success and joy and body-tumbling doom is drawn so very thin. Surfer and Episcopal rector Brian Taylor writes that when a swell comes along, you must apply your energy, paddling quickly with the wave. If you don't put in any effort, the wave passes you by and you go nowhere. But if you do point yourself in the right direction and paddle, if it is the right moment, then the power of the wave, much stronger than your own weak paddling, matches your effort, picks you up, and carries you forward. If the rider engages in this unique dance of the ocean, they may enter that hollow space of the wave's barrel, the eye of the storm. Adrenaline rushes, and eventually the surfer is either pushed underwater or spat out, exiting the pit of the wave and spewing with it air and foam. The ocean is a place where the paddler must choose to commit to the environment around them. If they wish to receive the gifts of the ocean's wave, they have to participate intimately, as much as they surrender to the vastness of the seas surrounding them. They have to risk to let it let be. Only there does grace have the occasion to open and enter. Surfing as a spiritual tradition is almost as old as the story of the world's retold by Bishop Ambrose, a theologian of the third century. In the book of Genesis, it is written, "Let the waters produce living things, and living things were born." Imitate the fish, Ambrose wrote. That fish is in the sea and he is on the waves. He is in the sea and swims with the swells of the water. On the sea, the storm rages. The winds scream out, but the fish swims. He is not swallowed up because he is used to swimming. To you, the world is the sea, its currents uncertain, its waves deep, its storms fierce. And you must be this fish, that the waves of the world do not swallow you. The surfer is spat out by the ocean smackdown on the shore. The fish is swept adrift in wild currents. Each rides the chaos without trying to harness or control it, but collaborating with the unending depths of water. Each of us are changed by life in profound ways that are sometimes sudden or sometimes anticipated. And yet if we allow ourselves to be guided to a depth, we may have a chance to be this fish in the way Ambrose suggested. Surfing on the swell of life's wave, we will still feel loss, irreversibly, painfully, and in the grieving, try not to lose ourselves. Catherine Keller writes that faith doesn't mean you can be whatever you want. The world is not your oyster. It is your ocean. Life is creative risk. Theologian James Luther Adams, who thought of himself as a theologian of grace, wrote that these moments of risk, of being love, are the moments of grace in which we may break wildly with our most recent reality, but it also preserves the essential parts of our present and our past. When the wave recedes and reforms into a different wave, water is still the same water. This is the persistence of grace. Whether we believe it comes from God or nature, or we see them as one and the same, or neither, we are enveloped by the possibility of being destroyed or suffering greatly. And yet sometimes we encounter mercy, relief. We then are changed, and yet still are human imperfect selves. Grace doesn't care so much if we believe in it as much as in our mutual participation. A surfer may gain skills to broaden the range of different waves they can attempt to ride, but each wave will need to be approached as a partner, as a co-creator. The fish may practice riding out the storm, but each gust will require their focus to be made afresh. So too we practice love on our calmer days, and we'll need to recognize that love when disaster ensues in order to take part in its unending power to heal, to let love buoy us up towards resilience. In our worship, we ready our hearts for transformation. We practice this power of accepting grace into our lives, the love holding us. An anonymous writer writes that, "Here is what I know about grace. I know sun breaking through the clouds and calling me out of my spiral of worries. I know stars splashed extravagantly across an expanse of dark night sky, reminding me that my life is really rather small and fleeting in the grand scheme of things. I know the weight of a sleepy, contented baby in my arms, inviting me to rest in the beauty of a moment. I know the kindness of a friend reaching across miles to soothe my wounded spirit. I know the beauty of a match lighting a candle in the midst of a dark winter, illuminating the table with just enough. I know the warm embrace that comes sometimes here in our sanctuary, when something in the music or the prayer or the ritual or the silence catches us just right, and it is clear that we are all right here, together in crafting something that is truly of worth." Grace is not a unilateral force. Our covenants as Unitarian Universalists shape the ground below us as a community of faith. But we don't know if our efforts will pay off. Perhaps not every seed will become a flower, but we won't know if we don't tend the soil around us. If we are touched by grace as Unitarian Universalists, human creatures that we are, as you use, we must reproduce grace again, holding fast to hope, striving to notice and embrace beauty, taking the opportunity to offer ourselves and one another mercy. Rabbi Rami Shapiro writes that there's no outside of the reach of grace, not the sinner, the heretic, the unbeliever, or the differently believing believer. There is nothing one can do to merit grace, earn grace, or even avoid it. Grace is unlimited and all-encompassing. There is a love holding us, holding all that we love. And all we must do is create the opportunity to receive that embracing grace. Let us practice together. We're going to continue to sing and hum and listen to our choir sing, "There is a Love." And I'm going to invite you to come to the back of the sanctuary. near the fan and the exit sign here, as you are willing and able, and as we are singing, to receive a seed paper heart, my Valentine, to you. And I would invite you to also take a pencil and write on that heart, there's a flat side here, the place in your life in which you need grace, where you might need more strength to hang on, a wound that might need healing, a journey for which you'd like some additional courage, the love that needs tending. And then you're not going to give it back or give it to anyone. You're going to take it home and plant it in the soil. And with that, let us sing again, There Is a Love. As you tend to the soil that cannot be separated from your heart, may you, as Reverend Kathleen McTeague writes, be showered with grace, amazing, unending. Even in our sorrows, we feel our lives cradled in holiness we cannot comprehend. The promise we offer here is that we are not alone.